welcome to another edition of Money Matters. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today. Today's economic forum is Money Matters, as you all know. And today is show number 339, entitled Market Indicators, Treasury Markets, and Hyperinflation. Hyperinflation's fun to talk about, so we're going to have a lot of fun today. Before we begin, remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Stock indices I may mention today are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Remember, past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk, of course. And the views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money. Money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. It controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack or abundance of it. It's about your lives and livelihood. It's about my lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about all of us. Okay, yeah, show 339. And the market was 35,000 something, referring to the Dow, of course. And then it kind of corrected down a couple of thousand points. I became a little hesitant about where it was going, so we lightened up on the portfolios, and I said as much in the last radio show, I think, or two shows before. Added some more defensive type stocks, food stocks and things. Can be defensive, not always, of course. Nothing is for sure as the market's concerned. So we added some food and some big shopping center stocks. Again, not a recommendation to buy or sell for sure. And then the thing turned around again. It seems to be that the Fed has the stock markets back, at least for now. There's an old adage, never fight the Fed. So if they've got interest rates in the dirt, which they do, if they're doing a lot of asset buying, which they are, called quantitative easing, where they buy bonds and treasuries and mortgages from banks to get money into the system, and they're doing a lot of that. And when they're doing bailouts and stimulus and everything else, which is what they're doing, then, of course, we know that some of it, a lot of it, most of it will find its way into the markets. My opinion only, and it has, with a COVID low of around 18,500, somewhere in there, if I recall, about third week of March. It is almost doubled. Whoopee, eh? So are you worried about it's going too high? Well, they say good, because markets climb a wall of worry. And a lot of customers are worried. And that kind of tells me that, in my opinion, the market will keep running. It's when everybody's not worried that everybody buys it, is when I do get worried. So I want you to think about an asset where everybody thinks you can't lose in it, and everybody's buying it, and everybody's in it. And that would be, used to be houses, right? Then it was dot-com stocks, actually in the reverse order. And of course, earlier in this year was infrastructure stocks, but the big one in history is crypto. Not only Bitcoin, there's like 150 other cyber coins out there. And that's what we see at the top of these manias. You see one company or one asset make a lot of money, and then you get a lot of copycats, and then you get some scams, which we've had, and then you get some stock issues where the companies will issue more stock, whether in crypto, that really can't happen. And then you get the ultimate blow apart. So I'm not quite sure it'll blow apart, but everybody seems to believe that crypto could do nothing but go up. And that kind of tells me I've never been a fan. Do I own a little bit of it? A little bit. Not much. Maybe 1% of my portfolios. But that's it. That's all I own. So we'll see what happens there. So, we'll be right back to start the show in just a second. You're listening to Money Matters on KVMR FM. And about 67 community radio stations throughout the country. Be right back. So they say, is the root of all evil today? But if you ask for a rise, it's no surprise that they're giving them away, away, away.
definitely was in the right.
Yes, definitely. I guess it was cruising for bruising.
Listening to show 339, entitled Market Indicators, Treasury Markets, and Hyperinflation. So, seasoned stock analysts, the guys you see on CNBC and Wall Street, are always looking for clues as to what might happen in the stock market. One of the most watched indicator, yet seldom discussed or even known about among mom-and-pop investors is the yield on the 10-year Treasury note. Treasuries are debt from the U.S. government, and are thought to be one of the safest investments on the planet. Thought to be. And for the most part, historically, they have been. Treasuries are of varying maturities. So they go from a few days to 30 years. And the length of the maturity, when you get your principal back, affects how the treasury is named. Treasury bills have maturity dates from a few days to 52 weeks. Treasury notes are from 2 years to 10 years. While Treasury bonds mature in about 20 or 30 years. Yield is the amount of interest you'll be paid when you purchase a Treasury. When you purchase a Treasury bill, note, or bond, remember the names are dependent on how long the maturity date is, you're essentially lending money to the U.S. government in return for the interest payment. In general, the longer out the maturity date, the higher the interest the Treasury will pay you. For example, a 30-year Treasury bond will pay a higher interest rate than a 30-day Treasury bill. The most watched Treasury debt, whether it be a bill, note, or a bond, by professional investors is, as mentioned, the 10-year note. The yield on this debt, the 10-year note, is one key to what analysts look to when making major prognostications as to where the market might be headed. What the interest rate is on the 10-year, and indeed the other maturities as well, and how fast it is moving, is usually reflective of investor confidence as it pertains to the perceived risk in the economy, as well as an indicator of inflation. When the consensus is that the economic environment is calm and inflation is tame, interest rates fall, indicating general fear is subsiding in the market and with investors. When interest rates start to rise, it can signal fear is also rising, as well as inflation, either of which can lead to market sell-offs. Although there was no one particular rate on the 10-year that is the rate that causes traders to head for the exits, when the 10-year Treasury starts to rise, the yield on it starts to rise, professionals start to get nervous. If the rates start to rise quickly, or in a disorderly manner, traders really get nervous. And you can find the rates and how they move on Google. Just Google rate on 10-year treasuries. The climb in rates and interest rates on all treasuries, and indeed the 10-year is what most people look at, as I mentioned. The climb in rates means that treasuries may start to compete for investor funds. In other words, the higher the rates go on treasuries, investors might say, well, I'd rather be in a treasury, which might be safer than the stock market. And when they do that, they take money out of the stock market to buy the treasury. So treasuries the money can come from stocks being sold. The higher the interest rate on treasuries go, the more tempted are investors to buy more treasuries and sell more stocks, so swap it out. I'll take a little bit less yield on a treasury, but I won't have as much risk as the stock market. You can still lose money on treasuries, not by default, but if you sell them early and interest rates go up, you can get a little bit of a haircut. It's kind of complicated how that works. We've discussed that before, but we won't cover it today for sure. Why rates rise and approach critical levels? Why the interest rates rise and approach critical interest rate levels can be a variety of causes. They can have a variety of causes, many of which are the subject of debate. It is thought that when investors are feeling more confident about the stock market, they slow their buying of these safe haven treasuries and instead buy riskier investments such as stocks. As such, when the demand for treasuries slow, because people are buying a lot more stocks, the prices of treasuries dip because there's not as many people buying them, and the yields go up. So what happens is when a lot of people are buying these treasuries, the government still has to sell them to finance their debt. So they increase the yield to attract more buyers. We'll pay you a higher interest rate if you buy them. Conversely, when investors are more wary about the health of the economy or the stock market, they're going to buy treasuries. So when they buy treasuries, the demand for treasuries go up, so the Treasury Department doesn't have to pay as much interest. They're saying, hey, we're selling a lot of treasuries, and so we don't have to pay as much interest, which is good for the government, right? You don't have to pay a higher interest rate. Whatever the reason, the increase in demand of treasuries comes from a decrease in the interest rate. So whatever the reason, with the increase in demand for treasuries comes a decrease in the interest rate. So when more and more people want to buy treasuries, the Treasury Department, the natural movement of the interest rate is to have interest rates drop. If treasury rates start to rise, if the rates on treasuries, the yields, the interest rates they pay starts to rise, it can signal a rise in investor euphoria. So remember, interest rates on treasuries will rise because there's less people buying them. So when you see less and less people buying treasuries, it means that investors are not too worried about the stock market, so they're going to put their money into stocks instead of these treasuries, because stocks generally move more than treasuries. So it can be said, if the rates rise, investors are throwing caution to the wind and are piling into more and more stocks and out of treasuries. Historically, this may mean the market has more of a chance to correct. How much and how fast it corrects, we won't know until it already occurs, right? What happens in the market is only only observational. You can only observe it when it's in the rearview mirror, right? It's already happened. It's hard to prognosticate the markets. No one can, but you can always tell what happened. If there is no one rate that means a slam dunk prognostication of what will happen in the market, and the 10-year treasury yield is not the only clue traders look to as to what might happen, you can't forecast market direction exclusively and without a chance of being wrong. We keep saying that. No one can. It's impossible. But the 10-year treasury is a major event. The yield is a major event and a major ongoing event that investors, you know, expert investors look at to gauge investor sentiment and a possible inflation concern. So, you know, they look at this 10-year note. So when the yields start to rise, it means that there's inflation because the economy is hot and good, it is thought, and investors are buying stocks. As always, keeping in mind, no one can forecast market direction at any time. The 10-year treasury yield is something they look at. Right now, just for your own edification, the 10-year note yields about 1.63% annually. The lowest we've seen, July of 2020, which was 0.53%, 0.5%, okay? Now it's about 1.5%. The 0.5% was a multi-decade low, 0.53%, July 2020. Now, the historical average for treasuries and indeed usury rates, which are interest rates people charge to borrow your money, the historical average is about 4 or 5%. But that has been consistently trending lower over the last 50 years. You look at a chart of interest rates, it goes lower and lower and lower. This decreasing trend in rates over many years is thought to be caused by the ever-increasing budget deficit of the United States, and indeed all the debt from us, because the more money we borrow, the more expensive it gets to service the debt, right? If you have a lot of money on credit cards, you got to pay interest. Well, so does the U.S. government and everybody else that borrows money. So the more and more you borrow, if the interest rates come down, you don't get into trouble. So since the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government set the rates, for the most part, and they're the ones borrowing, if they borrow a lot, they're also going to drop the rate, right? So we don't have to pay so much because we keep borrowing. National debt is national deficit, annual deficit, national deficit. We're running about, $157 trillion is unfunded liabilities. That's what we owe, but it's not due yet. $157 trillion. And the annual deficit is running about, $20-something trillion? Oh, I had the figure in my brain and I forgot. It's a lot, trust me. And they manufactured $5 trillion more in deficit spending this year alone. Took us about 200 years to spend the first trillion in deficit spending. And now we're doing, this year we did about $5 trillion. So there you go. Okay, we'll be right back to talk about hyperinflation and what it does, what it is. On Money Matters. We'll be right back. My name's Mark Cooper. The money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old man depression, you are through, you've done us wrong. We never see a headline, but a red line today. And when we see the landlord, we can let welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Cooper. So, the market keeps going up. Now, I've written about inflation many, many times. And inflation is a word that we all understand. Its effect on households, although somewhat tame in recent decades. I mean, everything's going up. But compared to what it could be, it's kind of been tame. In fact, after 2009, we saw commodities, which is all the stuff is made of. We saw like a 7-year decrease in commodities. It's odd. Deflation. Now, not everything went down after 08 and 09, but commodities did drop 4-6% a year for 5-7 years. I know. I owned them, which I wouldn't have in hindsight. But in any case, inflation has been tame in recent decades, and I've done, I think, 11 articles in the last 16 months or so saying it's coming. Inflation is coming. And now, ta-da, inflation is ravaging balance sheets, probably yours, and companies as well. I've warned about it. I said it was coming. 11 articles and I think three shows in the last 16 months. So one of the things I've never used when referring to inflation, I've never used the H word, hyperinflation. We all know inflation is rising prices and that can have many different causes. Monetary inflation, we've talked about a lot, is the most insidious and the most common. Monetary inflation is simply an increase in the money supply, printing more dollars. For a conceptual moment of monetary inflation, just think Mexican peso. Okay, got it? Got it. Other types of inflation are demand inflation, which is more people want whatever it is that is rising in price for whatever the reason, demand inflation. There's supply side inflation, which is a shortage of something. Regulatory inflation is a tax or levied added by a governing body, making the good or service more expensive, regulatory inflation. And there are other types of obscure inflation, but whatever causes inflation, whichever brand it is, whichever version it is, the symptom is a general rise in prices. How much and how fast prices rise has a lot to do with what we call inflation expectations, okay? To conceptualize inflation expectations, just think back to the housing bubble, when people scurried to buy a house in fear of quickly rising prices. During the housing bubble, when prices were rising fast and furiously, the fact that homeowners knew and expected a fast increase in prices caused a rush-to-buy mindset to lock in a price before they went even higher, right? Gotta buy a house because next month's going to be even higher. And the realtors pushed that prophecy, or whatever it was, they pushed that till the cows came home. This rush to buy was a self-fulfilling prophecy. The faster prices rose, the faster people bought houses. This is a perfect example of inflation expectations. Although inflation can steadily and seriously erode a family's purchasing power and subsequently cause an increase in the homeless and the poor, hyperinflation is devastating to the vast majority of consumers, businesses, and the economy itself as a whole. When hyperinflation occurs, it is always monetary, which means it is caused by the printing of currency. The speed at which prices rise in hyperinflation can be astounding. History is rife with examples of hyperinflation. Mexico, Argentina, Venezuela, Germany in the early 1900s, and Zimbabwe's hyperinflation starting in 2007, and it was estimated to be, sit down for this, 79.6 billion percent a month and 89.7 sextillion percent annually in mid-November 2008. I'm looking at a $50 trillion bill from Zimbabwe. $50 trillion. A lot of zeros. Although I have forecasted the coming of significant inflation in my many articles here in the U.S., I've never mentioned a hyperinflationary threat, at least for us. Surprisingly, however, more than a few notables have warned that a hyperinflationary threat is brewing in the United States. Twitter CEO, also CEO of Square, that little device that you slip your card into on a machine, and well-known market analyst Mark Faber, among a few others, have spelled out the reasons they believe a hyperinflationary event may be coming to the United States and to a store near you. Actually, hyperinflation strikes to every store near you and not near you. They believe massive government bailouts, stimulus, and deficit spending will result not only in rising prices, which is what you are seeing now, and I am too, but quickly turn in the exponential price explosion that is hyperinflation. Specifically, these gentlemen point to the $5 trillion or so spent in the last year for COVID relief, coupled with massive deficit spending, government projects, unemployment benefits and the massive government deficits they have been running since the late 1990s. With more spending programs in government debate as we speak, the amount of money entering the economy and that has entered it in the last 20 or so years is already baked in hyperinflation into the cake, or so these two gentlemen believe. Hyperinflation is very serious. It can quickly force millions into poverty. Quickly. Empty store shelves, yep, that's a symptom, and destroy businesses. It is also very difficult to eradicate. Eradicating hyperinflation is difficult. And the measure, here's the problem. The measures to eradicate hyperinflation also wreak havoc on an economy and its people. In the case of hyperinflation, the cure is almost as bad as the disease. Measures to deal with hyperinflation are the same for inflation, but on a much, much more drastic scale. The government has to stop spending. It has to eliminate or severely cut back many social programs. Interest rates must rise, and they have to rise by a lot, and they have to rise quickly. And fiscal restraint by the government must be practiced on all levels. If all that occurs just to fix hyperinflation, the world will change as you know it. Should hyperinflation indeed be in our future, so will be, unfortunately, untold misery for all. Or should I say, most. That does it for this edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Don't forget you're listening to 339. Money Matters is now aired, well, for now, it's a COVID-reduced version, about 30 minutes. The email for me is news@moneymanagementradio.com. And our website is moneymanagementradio.com, and the website is free. No charges, whatever. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. Now remember, the views here today on the show should not be construed as investment advice and is not representing the opinion of any bank, investment or advisory firm, or this station, its staff, management, or underwriters. The website, again, moneymanagementradio.com, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. As a disclaimer, I hold California Insurance License OL34249, and I'm a Medicare agent approved in the state of California. Send me an email if you have any questions, or send it to the program director at this station. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Thanks for listening.